connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
If podcasting is sure to result in victory, then you must podcast. Sun Tzu said that. And I think he knows a little more about podcasting than you do, pal. Because he invented it. And then, he made enough money from podcasting that he could buy two of every animal and put them in a subscription box service. I don't know where this is going.
Welcome to NetSurfer Pro, a worldwide ride through the World Wide Web. I am Galen, and with me as always is Matt, and we have a special guest, the soldier from Team Fortress 2.
I have done nothing but listen to Comedy Bang Bang old episodes for the last 3 days.
Welcome to the podcast, soldier. We have given you all of the accoutrements that you've asked for. We have given you bread. We have given you a teleporter. We have given you a bald eagle. You have snapped its neck, but then neck fixed it. I guess the only question that I have is, will you sit quietly for the rest of the podcast and not say anything?
That's me saying nothing to say yes. Wait, no, I just broke it.
Wonderful. Well, as you can probably tell from that stellar intro, today's topic is about a certain video game that came out in 2007 that people might have heard of. It's a little bit important. It's pretty well known, still fairly popular today. That's right. We're talking about Portal. Now, my favorite thing about Portal is Chamber 11.
Is that the first one where you actually like get to play around with gravity flings?
That's the one where you have to look away from boxes that are dropping and then look back so that the physics work properly. Hang on, I'm thinking of Quantum Conundrum.
Oh, right. Okay, no, we're talking about Portal's sibling game, Team Fortress 2. Without further ado, let's get into the fact corner, which I have a brand new little jingle theme for.
The fact corner.
All right, so Team Fortress 2 was originally... Well, okay, let's back this up a bit. Team Fortress 2 is based off a game, or the sequel to a game called Team Fortress, which was a mod for Quake, made by Robin Walker and John Cook. During the development of a standalone sequel, Valve hired the team to make an official mod for Half-Life as a promotional sort of example of the Half-Life software development kit. So they made Team Fortress Classic in 1999, and then afterwards Valve kept them on payroll for them to fully develop the sequel TF2, Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, I almost feel like we kind of have to explain who Valve is now.
Okay.
I say that with only a little bit of salt. I do have some salt over Valve, but Valve you probably know as the owners and operators of Steam, the service that most PC gaming is done through.
The iTunes of video games.
Basically. And Valve doesn't really make that many games anymore. Obviously, recently they came out with Half-Life Alyx, the first, like, basically the first full VR video game experience. But, like, Valve used to be basically the cutting-edge video game developer. Half-Life is the big example of a video game that, like, basically revolutionized the genre.
See, the thing about Valve is, like, they haven't made that many games.
Yeah, like, they don't make too many games, but every time they make a game, it's like a world-shattering classic.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that a lot of the games that they're known for are them buying other studios that were, like, either making mods or making smaller projects. So Team Fortress 2, they purchased, or they hired, you know, the devs of Team Fortress. Dota 2, they hired Ice Frog, one of the devs behind the original Dota. Portal was a student project from DigiPen, I believe, that they hired the team to make the final version of the game. And I want to say Counter-Strike started as a mod for something else, but I'm not certain.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Probably some kind of source mod.
Yeah, so like Valve hasn't made many games altogether as well. Like they had Half-Life. They had some games between that and Half-Life 2. Then they had Episode 1 and Episode 2. And then, yeah, they have a lot of like service games that they've updated over time. One of the more recent examples being Artifact, which flopped.
Yeah.
And so like Valve, there's reasons behind this that have been well documented by people more familiar with Valve's corporate structure than me. It is important to kind of note that Valve is mainly in the role of a distributor now. They have these software teams, including their Team Fortress team, but they're less pronounced as a company. You know, it's not like, I guess, Blizzard or Riot would be good examples where, like, while they do function sort of as distributors, they're mainly in the position of making games. Or even EA, even, has a lot of in-house studios making games constantly. Yeah. Valve doesn't have, like, yearly releases. But all of Valve's games are crucial to the gaming culture and internet culture.
Yeah, like Overwatch obviously was extremely popular for some time, and Overwatch 2 is recently announced. Overwatch would not exist without Team Fortress 2.
Yes, Team Fortress 2 also is like a big part of gaming culture online in like the 2000s.
Yeah. After
2006, when it released with Orange Box. Orange Box is notable because not only did it contain the Half-Life 2 series, but it also had Portal. Portal, similarly, TF2 kind of created a subgenre of FPS. Portal created a subgenre of puzzle game. And Portal also is influential to both gaming as a, like, from the dev side, but also as the communal player social side.
Yeah.
Let's see. So in 2007, the Orange Box properties were later released on PC, and TF2 was updated to a more like long-term form on the PC. They also began uploading the Meet the shorts on YouTube. Meet the Heavy, I believe, was the first one.
Yes, it was.
These were sort of like character introductions and animated shorts mixed together. Some of them were pretty much just the like audition scripts they gave to the voice actors, while some of them are much more involved and have more unique animations. The final Meet the short was Meet the Pyro in 2012. But later, a like standalone short film expiration date was released in 2014, and we will get to those later in more detail.
Yeah,
and then there's also been comics and alternate reality games that expand the world's lore, and there is lore to be had.
Yeah, the Team Fortress 2 really does sort of like I would say it almost sort of embodied the philosophy of like multiplayer games with lore for a while, which was have the lore but have it as far behind any individual match as possible, where like the idea say Brink was something that came out in like 2011, the idea that comes about from it is basically in an individual match, it is hard to pay attention to the story, to the lore. So what you want is to have the lore be the entire set dressing and something fun to look into afterwards. But in an individual game, you don't want any of that there. Right. Now, that's a rule. Like, that was a rule for a while. That's, I wouldn't say that's a rule anymore, necessarily.
Right.
But, like,
You see environmental storytelling, like Overwatch will have like protest posters or scrapped robots on the stages, kind of hidden in corners, but none of those distract the player from the gameplay itself and are often more of a reward for people who want to explore the levels for the sake of it.
Yeah.
TF2 kind of has this, like the red and blue sides have somewhat distinct architecture. that is mostly maintained throughout the series, like the different maps. There is like information of the Manco, for example, that is present in the maps, like design and art. It's just not at the forefront.
Yeah.
And this sort of is, it's really common because it's hard to justify a PvP match for lore reasons. You see a lot of games kind of try to tackle it, but it's more so that the games that do that are notable because they do that. Sort of like how Hades is notable because it makes a story out of a game that's meant to be played indefinitely and like constantly starting over. Usually in competitive games, games that focus on telling a story through the PvP matches are notable because they do that. Whereas like, yeah, you know, something like League of Legends, the actual PvP is non-canon.
Yeah. To briefly sort of explain the lore of Team Fortress 2, pretty much all of the conflict that comes about is because of what is known as the Gravel Wars between two sons of a man named, I think, like Zedediah Man or something like that. But there's Redmond Man and Blue Tarch Man, red and blue, respectively. And they are basically in a perpetual war where they have hired mercenaries to sabotage each other's businesses in order to win the war. Their dad like literally split both of their inheritances in complete half, which if you dig deeper into the lore is literally because he hated his sons and wanted them to fight until the day they died, which is kind of great. But the all of the like the individual characters, the individual classes don't, like, they have backgrounds, they don't necessarily have stories, at the very least, like, stories from before the comics take place. There's, like, little details, like, Scout canonically has a mom that the opposing team's spy is in love with. little things like that. But, like, the story is primarily relegated to the background and environmental details.
And comics and alternate reality games.
Yeah.
At some point, is it Manfred Man is the one that supplies or that made Manco, or is that Saxton Hale?
Saxton Hale, I think, is the supplier of, yeah, Manco.
And yeah, and that's where they get all their weapons and shit.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of just give a brief overview of TF2 if you have no idea what it is. Just a very quick look at the game. TF2 is a first-person shooter where there are two teams of different numbers of players depending on what game mode. And each player takes on a class, which is a character that has sort of a few different types of weapons that define them, and then you go head-to-head doing different objectives based on what mode it is. There's like a capture the flag game type, there are King of the Hill game types where you capture a point and defend it, there are attack and defend points where one team is pushing forward to capture extra points, and another team is defending those points from being captured. There is a mode where you're like pushing forward like a bomb or something.
Yeah, a bomb usually.
Along a track, and you don't want your opponents to stop you. There is also a PvE mode called Man vs. Machine, where, you know, you fight robots and so forth. There is also other side modes like Medieval mode, where everybody has medieval weapons, things like that. The main modes people know are the first three I mentioned, though. And, so each class, there are 9 of them, I believe.
Yes.
And, like, they're called classes because, like, they're not really given a name. It's, like, Scout, Soldier, Spy, Tinker Tailor. But the thing is that they kind of are characters.
Yeah, so the Scout is the character from Team Fortress 2, not like the engineer is the character, not Dale Conniger, which I think is his real name.
So TF2 is arguably the first hero shooter, or at least Team Fortress. This is a genre that sort of has had ups and downs. The most notable other examples are Overwatch, which was Blizzard's take on it that gave the characters more defined, like, personalities and pasts and backstories. Rainbow Six Siege, which incorporates it into a more tactical mode. And Apex Legends, which is a battle royale hero shooter.
Yeah.
But TF2 is pretty much what made it popular. The hero concept is a sort of game design idea where the characters, where you have characters with defined mechanical identities and thematic identities, and those identities, they kind of influence one another, they highlight one another. The theme of the character matches how you play them, it informs you how to play them, and how you play them ideally informs you on what their personality is like. So, for example, with TF2, Scout is very arrogant and cocky, and so he is very fast, and he likes to get in people's faces. You know, he has a really good, like, shotgun. Contrast that with Heavy, who is, like, slow and brutish, and he has the highest health and damage, but the lowest speed. Or, for example, Spy is very snarky and kind of hates everybody, but that's because he also literally backstabs people.
Yeah. I know that, like, one of the big goals when they were creating TF2 is that they wanted each class to have its own distinct silhouette so that you could at a glance tell basically every piece of information you need to know about that class for you to respond to it.
Exactly.
And so, like, you know, each of the 9 characters, no matter how many cosmetics you put on them, which we'll get to that, will always look like, always have a core look to them. The medic will always have the big flowing trench coat. The engineer will pretty much always have the sort of like stocky look, but with some kind of like glove or otherwise mechanical looking thing to tell you this is an engineer. The demo man will always have like the like grenades to his chest and kilty looking thing. It's all to inform you at an immediate glance what you need to do, and all to inform you at an immediate glance like this is the kind of character this is, so you can maybe look at any individual one and go, I want to play that one.
Right. It's also that, you know, in a match you can immediately make out the makeup of the enemy team and be like, they have this many soldiers, there's a sniper over there. It helps you manage that information much easier because each class plays pretty differently. And so, like, instead of having to spend time to actually remember what each character does, per se, you just know that, like, Pyro's probably going to try and get close to do the flamethrower thing, you know, or they have an engineer, I need to watch out for sentries. That type of stuff.
Yeah.
So it is worth noting that each class has like a few different weapon types. You know, they have like a melee weapon and then 2 range weapons, with some exceptions. But each class still does play differently. Some of them are pretty similar. Like Scout moves fast and has a shotgun. Soldier moves kind of slow but has a rocket launcher. Demo Man has a grenade launcher, which is kind of like the rocket launcher, but with grenades, so they travel with gravity. Some of them are also still more grounded while being unique, like Sniper, who has a sniper rifle, or Pyro, who has a flamethrower. There are some more unique and defined characters. The notable ones are Medic, who heals people and can also ubercharge them, which boosts their damage and health. There is Spy, who can disguise as other players on the opponent's team and backstab people that way. And then there is Engineer, who can create sentry turrets, teleporters, and health dispensers.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like we should probably take this class by class.
Yeah.
Because I do have at least one fun fact, but like taking it class by class is the best way to sort of encapsulate all of it, because like in game, everything flows together very well. In game, you don't really like have to actively think about, there's a scout here, they are probably lower health, I can probably kill them in two shotgun blasts, but I need to be good with my shots. Like, that's just sort of game sense that comes very naturally. But, like, all nine of the classes have their own specific, unique flair. So, right.
Also, I mean, one thing that that TF2 does that not many other hero shooters have done is characters can get unique weapons for them, which alter their traits. Sometimes yes. These are minor, like, stat adjustments, like slower firing speed but higher damage, or narrow area of effect but more damage if direct hit. Some of them change the character wildly, and so I wouldn't mind bringing some of those up as we go through the classes.
Yes. So let's start off first, nice and easy, with the scout. The scout is, as mentioned, a very cocky, very arrogant kind of, he's from like Brooklyn or Jersey or
Long Island or something.
Yeah. He talks like a Bronx man. I'm the Bronx man.
If you were from where I was from, I'd be going down to the deli. Yeah.
The scout boasts a 125 health pool, which is lower than average. The average kind of being like 200. However, he has 133% speed of any of the classes. He has a scatter gun, which is basically the shotgun. A lot of classes have the shotgun, but only the scout and the engineer have them as their primary weapon. And the scatter gun has like very minor altered stats, but it really doesn't matter. He has a pistol. He has a baseball bat. And he is a pester character, but he's also extremely good at rushing down. He's a glass cannon where, like, the moment a scout rounds a corner, either you kill him or he kills you, but there is no in between.
Yeah, I believe I read that scout also counts as two characters for the sake of capturing points.
Yes, yeah.
Which means that he is specifically very good on offense. And the sort of pester, I believe, I'm assuming you mean, like, he's good at kind of poking at characters and being annoying while still kind of, like, running away.
Yeah.
A hit and run sort of style. Yeah. So something I think is really cool about Scout. Did you mention the double jump?
No, I did not. Yeah.
So Scout has a double jump.
Yeah. Scout has a double jump. The only class to have a double jump on command. We'll get to that. Some of his primary weapons, can even like get that to a triple jump. There's a bat that like you can do a triple jump at like, you know, something like 10 health or something like that, which might not sound like a lot, but a big part of the TF2 meta is counting health.
Right. Force of nature is a weapon Scout can get that does a lot of recoil. And so Scout can use that as a sort of makeshift double jump, or to, like, you know, boost in a direction in midair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Scout has a lot of mobility and is pretty good up close. Something I do love about the Scout's weapons is that Scout's baseball bats are pretty interesting. There's a few that give him projectiles on the baseball bat.
Cause, yeah, like,
it's a bat, you know, it's it shoots baseballs in a way. I specifically love, what is it, the Rap Master, I want to say?
The Rap Assassin.
Assassin, which shoots a Christmas ornament.
The Rap Assassin shoots a Christmas ornament that does bleeding damage. But the downside is that because it is a literal cardboard tube, it it does the lowest, like, melee damage of, I think, literally any melee weapon. Like, single-digit damage.
Yeah.
The Scout actually has a unique melee property, which is that he does, I think, 35 damage per swing instead of 65, but he has a double speed melee attack, which melee is not generally useful unless you're kind of specifically kidding out for it. But like, because of random crits, which are a thing in casual, that means that the Scout has something of an advantage, or like, it is more viable to bring out a melee weapon as a Scout than as necessarily another class, possibly.
Right. It should be mentioned that Scout has a number of drinks he can drink instead of a instead of an alternate weapon, I believe.
Yeah.
But those are all banned in the competitive playlist, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Scout's like this very mobile, very quick character. Do you have anything else for Scout?
I don't believe I do, so we could go on to Soldier, if okay, you'd like. Yeah.
So Soldier is, he has the generic rocket launcher, which is pretty strong. Rocket launcher, of course, being a weapon that shoots a rocket. Rockets explode. They explode in an area. And also, they provide a lot of knockback, which the soldier can use to rocket jump.
Yeah, rocket jumping is... Rocket jumping... Okay, rocket jumping is a concept, kind of started with a Quake. There's a cat in my room now. It started with Quake, where you could literally get knockback from your rockets and use that as a momentum sort of thing, a movement. Team Fortress 2, the soldiers, like, the soldier moves generally pretty slow. To get good in a competitive sense, you have to learn rocket jumping.
Right. What's interesting is Soldier has a few alternate items that make it easier to rocket jump. There is just straight up a rocket launcher called the Rocket Jumper that makes it do no damage, but allows you to, you know, rocket jump with it easier.
Yeah.
There's also the Gun Boots, which make him take reduced damage from rocket explosions that he does. Or sorry, Gun Boats. And then there is also, I don't remember what it's called, Man Treads, which give you extra air control when rocket jumping.
Yeah. The existence of all of these kind of coalesced into a specific, like, subclass called the Trollger. Subclass in this sense means, like, just a very specific loadout you give the character that completely changes their entire purpose.
Right. It's sort rather of a build is what you would call it in other games.
Yeah.
Just, like, very specifically putting these items together.
Yeah, but the Trollger subclass is basically you run the Rocket Jumper, the Man Treads to give yourself much better control in the air, and the Market Gardener, which is a shovel that has some kind of downside, but if you are rocket jumping, it does crits.
Oh, right. And I should mention, every character has their own type of melee weapon that kind of fits their personality.
Yeah, so like the Scout has the baseball bat because, you know, like, sort of zippy, athletic, whereas the Soldier has shovels because he's a soldier.
Or pickaxes.
Yeah, pickaxes. I don't remember, is there anything else for him? No.
There's the half Zatoichi, which is a sword, but that's not important.
But yeah, the Soldier also has, like, the rocket launcher, it should be noted, has four rockets in it, which, like, are all just front-loaded into the front of the rocket launcher, which is fun. And a lot of the rocket launchers are just extremely neat. My favorite, personally, being the Beggar's Bazooka, which is something where you can, like, load... You don't have a clip. Instead, you load rockets into it live, and then you can fire up to three rockets, like, in extremely rapid succession. But there's also, like, a rocket called the Airstrike, where if you are rocket jumping, then you can shoot extremely fast.
Yeah. There's the Cow Mangler, which has an alternate shot that does one giant explosion.
Yeah. There's, the Direct Hit, which is, like, far, far less radius for splash damage, but like extremely fast projectile speed and more damage, which is quite insane. If you know how to aim your shots,
quite good.
Yeah.
Soldier is just kind of very all around. I mean, rocket launchers in most FPSs that have them are pretty good, and Soldier just kind of embodies that.
Yeah.
The mobility is really fun, though.
He also has quite a few secondaries that replace his shotgun that are like buffs. They're called banners. So like the Contra has a buff that like can heal health for your teammates. The buff banner is the most direct one, which if you do a certain amount of damage, you can toot a horn, and then all of your teammates in like radius will do mini crits. And it's a good change because, so like the default loadouts are usually pretty much the most well-rounded. And in a lot of cases, the default primaries are pretty much the most well-rounded, weapons of that class. But through the years of updates, a lot of secondaries have been kind of made obsolete. So like with the soldier, it's a little bit less so, but the shotgun is usually a little bit less useful than having some kind of banner for your team. Because like if you're playing soldier how you should, you probably won't be running out of your primary ammo all that much, you know?
Yeah.
And so like a lot of the meta is kind of thinking about things like that, where it's like, this is basically obsolete because I pretty much will never use it. So can I sub it out for something that I might actually find use for?
Okay, let's see. Where to next?
I believe the next class is Demo Man?
Sure, let's go with Demo Man.
Yeah, I'm personally just running down the list.
Okay, yeah. So Demo Man has a grenade launcher, which shoots grenades. They explode. They do knockback. They follow gravity. And he also has a sticky launcher, which shoots sticky bombs that stick onto whatever surface they hit. And then you can use like a command to explode them manually.
Yeah.
Sticky.
Hey guys, it's me, Galen from the future. I'm live editing this right now to say that I had a really silly mistake here. The actual next class was the Pyro, which we talk about next. But also all the classes' denominations are a little bit weird because of how the meta has gone through. But anyway, continue listening to us talking about the Demo Man.
Okay, so if I talk about the Pyro next, will that create a paradox?
Oh God!
Well, guess we'll
Snake,
have to.
We've created a time paradox.
Demo Man. Sticky launchers also are a method of mobility, though personally I find them much harder than rocket launching. But also, the sticky bombs can be moved by the Pyro, which we'll, you know, get to later. And then the Demo Man's melee weapon normally is the bottle, like a bottle of whiskey or scotch, maybe. But yeah,
he's a raving drunk Scotsman.
Yeah, but it's notable that the Demo Man has a lot of other melee weapons that are like medieval weaponry. There's an axe. There's a scimitar. I don't know what to call that. There's like a claymore.
There's a scimitar. There's a claymore. And like the Demo Man has so many melee weapons that like have their own unique properties that like with the help of some other weapons that replace the sticky bomb launcher and the grenade launcher, you can play a subclass called Demo Knight where you focus entirely on melee.
Yeah. He also has like shields instead of the sticky launcher,
which can, like, for a right click, lets you charge forward and usually do some kind of, usually it gives you crits on melee. And so, like, the Demo Man is very fun because he has more movements than the soldier in general. He walks a little bit faster, and the, like, he walks a little bit faster, and kind of like the sticky launcher gives you a bit more direct control if you know how to use it. But he is also a little bit more focused on doing things like trapping a certain corner, or like randomly shooting out some grenade pills to like disrupt the enemy. So like he is about direct damage, but like in a team sense, his goal is not necessarily 100% damage, but it's more like mind games.
He has a lot of zone control, you know. Yeah. He's really good at filling up space with weapon or with damage, making it hard to move around a position, and controlling where your opponents can go.
Yeah. Demoman is probably my favorite class.
Demoman's really fun. I want to learn sticky jumping, but I never did.
I honestly find sticky jumping a little bit easier for me because, so, rocket jumping is, I think, a little, rocket jumping and sticky jumping in Team Fortress 2 is jank in the same sense that wave dashing is jank, where it's not that it's necessarily unintuitive. Wave dashing is a little bit unintuitive, but it's not that it's necessarily unintuitive, it's that other games that have come out since have sort of made it a little bit easier than it was. And so going back to the, like, an older example makes it a little bit difficult. Cause like,
yeah.
So like, rocket jumping for this example, to rocket jump, you have to walk forward a little bit. You have to like be walking in the direction you want to rocket jump, then flick your mouse, sort of like down behind you, jump, crouch, shoot the rocket, continue crouching as you turn back towards towards where you want to go, and not press any movement keys.
Yeah.
except for maybe doing a little bit of readjusting, but like you specifically want to not press any movement keys. And so like it's the kind of thing where it's a little bit more intuitive when you're trying to do it, but like the actual laying out the keys is like press W, press D, then S, your mouse, jump, hold control, click, move back, stop pressing any of the movement keys. It's weird. Whereas when you compare that to, say, like doing a mine jump with Junkrat in Overwatch, you just lay your mine and then get on top of it, explode it, and you generally kind of know where you're going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think wave dashing is a great example or a great comparison. It's something you have to practice a lot, but like in later games, you don't have to practice it as much.
Yeah.
So it feels very clunky in comparison. Yeah. I think they definitely are rewarding, and I love watching people play like jump maps with Soldier and Demo.
Yeah.
But I don't blame people for not wanting to learn those.
Yeah, if you want to get serious about the meta and you don't necessarily can't necessarily wrap your head around it, I would choose Demo over Soldier, just because Soldier kind of relies on like jumping around a lot. It relies on like roaming around the map to watch the flank and stuff like that, whereas Demo is like sticky jumping is a part of it, but it's not the entire part.
Yeah, I guess let's go ahead and go to Pyro now.
Yeah, Pyro makes me sad.
yeah, you can go ahead.
Explain. So Pyro has a flamethrower, a shotgun that's pretty much obsolete, and a fire axe. And the problem with Pyro is just that he's not a bad class, or she's not a bad class. That's one of the big important things, is that we do not know the Pyro's gender. Like, decidedly, it's a constant joke that they will never reveal Pyro's gender, sort of thing.
Yeah, they don't have to.
Exactly. Pyro can live their life however they please.
And that means they might just live their life not being quite good enough to be competitive.
Yeah.
So yeah, Pyro has a flamethrower, which is flamethrower things, does damage in an area in front of them. Most of the flamethrowers can air blast, which shoots a little bit of air. Air blast notably can reflect some projectiles. Yeah, I know it can reflect rockets.
That's kind of a big tech that's really fun with Pyro, is learning how to air blast.
Yeah, they can also move sticky bombs that are on locations, like I said earlier.
But the problem with Pyro is basically just that Pyro is great at close range, but they kind of fall off really badly at mid-range, and mid-range is where most of the game is played. So, like, Pyro, you probably will want to get very good at flanking and getting around the enemy and then getting behind them and doing a lot of WM1, just destroy everything in front of you. It's great. It's fun. But, like, the moment that you are at the kind of range that, like, even just a soldier or a demo will be, you're just not as useful.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because, like, the Pyro is genuinely one of my favorite classes. It's extremely fun, but it's just sort of like a little bit
I don't have much else to say on Pyro. A friend of mine likes to play Pyro, but I've never really been into Pyro.
Yeah, it's fair. The Pyro does have a very good example of a weapon that has basically obsoleted one of their old weapons, which is the flare gun. The flare gun is unlockable, that turns your shotgun into a single shot flare gun that shoots a flare, that, you know, it gives you a better mid-range option that puts people on fire. And if you hit them while they're on fire, it will mini crit. And so, like, a lot of the side weapons that have been given to the Pyro have basically been side grades to the flare gun rather than side grades to the shotgun, although there are also side grades to the shotgun that exist. But, like, it's the sort of thing where they gave Pyro a shotgun early on because the shotgun was kind of like a filler secondary, but as they made more weapons and updated the game, the shotgun has just kind of, like, It's a default weapon that you are actually sort of being a little bit suboptimal if you're using, you know?
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that, really quick to just touch on Overwatch, Mei has the equivalent of the flamethrower, but also has the equivalent of the flare gun and not the shotgun. To just kind of show that a shotgun and the flamethrower kind of fill the same purpose. Just, you know, one is fun and fiery. The other is a shotgun.
Yeah.
Okay, and now that we have cleared that possible temporal failure, we can talk about the next class, Heavy Weapons Guy.
And this is his weapon.
And this Heavy is Heavy Weapons Guy.
Heavy is extremely fun to play. Heavy is also an example of a secondary kind of replacing it, that being the Sandwich, which is just infinitely better than the shotgun.
Sorry, Sandwich.
Sandwich. But he has lunchbox items, and they're pretty much infinitely better than the shotgun, because you more or less always want to be using your minigun as much as possible. So,
I was just going to say, Heavy's main weapon is this, like, minigun, chain gun sort of gun. You know, just, like, rapid fire. It takes a second to start up, but once it gets going, it gets going.
Yeah. Heavy is big, Heavy is slow, and Heavy is very loud and fun. Heavy is also a very big example of, like, the most deviance from intended character to how he is, like, perceived by the community, I would say. Because, like, Heavy is as much of a cold-blooded killer as, like, any of the other mercs. But Heavy is the class to play if you are being friendly in a match where you're not attacking the enemy team or anything. You will often see this sort of manifest as, like, a crouching Hoovie, where, like, they crouch, they maybe give their sandwich to the other player, or to the other team, and they just, you know, don't attack or anything. And so, like, he's in the, you know, lore, he's obviously just sort of a big killing machine, but, like, he's this big mascot teddy bear.
Yeah, he has big community. Teddy bear energy to the community.
Yeah. But yeah, Heavy is very fun. Heavy has a lot of fun movement options, even despite being slow. A lot of fun melee options. I would say that he is the class that you probably should start playing as, although he is also basically a magnet for all snipers and spies.
Yeah. He's often like a huge damage dealer, but of course gets dealt damage because of that. I do want to say his melee weapon is fists, to just drive home how much of a living machine he is. How much of an absolute powerhouse.
Yeah, all of his weapons are just like things that he puts on his fists, like boxing gloves or mittens is one of them. And they're actually meta. Yeah, brass knuckles. Heavy is extremely fun. You will die a lot as Heavy, but you will also have a lot of fun just mowing down opponents.
Yeah. So who do we got after Heavy?
After Heavy is, as we have mentioned multiple times, Engineer.
Yes. Engineer. He is the most, I don't know where I'm going with that. He plays guitar. That's pretty fun. Engineer, as previously mentioned, he builds sentries, teleporters, and dispensers. These are all handled through a, like, tablet sort of device.
Yeah, a PDA.
Yeah, and he builds them and repairs them with a wrench, which is his melee weapon. So he's one of the classes that has melee weapons active for quite a long time. The sentry has three levels. Each of them has a higher health and higher damage. These are all just like kind of turrets that target enemies that come by. But they cost scrap to upgrade and build. And the engineer gets scrap through, I want to say it's just like pickups he gets.
Yeah, he gets scrap through the ammo canisters that most classes get ammo from.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Teleporters have an entrance and exit teleporter. And if a teammate steps on an entrance teleporter for long enough, they'll go to the exit. It's not like instantaneous. And then dispensers give health and I think ammo to people that use them.
Yeah. Engineer is interesting. He's probably the second most focused on support. The first most focused being medic, because that's support is basically his only role. But Engineer is also an interesting way in which, like, the mentality of the buildings has changed, where, like, a sentry gun is basically an area denial. Like, it's not actually necessarily to be dealing damage. It's not supposed to necessarily be getting kills. It is the kind of thing you build because you want that area to be very hard for the other team to get into.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the dispenser is often thought of as, like, the kind of thing you fall back to get refill ammo and such like that. But the more optimal play is actually to put it up near the front line, because it's supposed to be more for your team than just for you.
Yeah, it's to limit your teammates' travel time back to a safe spot.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to mention that, for one thing, I love the Wrangler, which is Gunslinger. Wrangler is something else that's banned. Gunslinger lets you build mini sentries, which are cheaper and cost less, but cannot be upgraded. And they have less health, but it lets you kind of play this like aggressive engineer that advances and pushes with the team and uses mini sentries offensively. Normally sentries are too expensive to be placed aggressively, but Gunslinger is sort of the exception.
Yeah. Gunslinger is a single weapon that, like, it's, I guess it is its own subclass of battle engineer, but like, It's an upgrade or a side grade that completely changes how you think of the entire class.
Yeah. So I really love that. This game in general has a lot of these things where it's like one weapon can change how you play entirely. I do want to mention that the engineer has a lot of counterplay to him, though. So, like, Demo does extra damage to things built by engineer, and Scout or Spy, who we'll get to later, is like hard denial on engineer.
Yeah.
It's like this very fine line of making engineer so good that nobody can attack, and like, you know, giving the other team enough ways to shut it down without him being useless.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says the word erect a lot, which is haha, hee. I apologize for that joke.
He is the funny nope man.
Nope.
So moving on from the second most support class to the most support class.
Medic.
Ma'am.
Oktoberfest.
Medic has no offensive capabilities. That's not entirely true, but that's also not entirely untrue.
You're forgetting about the medic's bone saw.
Well, yes, the entirely invalid bone saw.
Yeah.
Okay, so the medic is very fun. Despite what I'm saying, the medic is actually very fun, very stressful.
Yeah, we don't have a support stigma in this household.
Exactly.
We appreciate our healers.
I have played Mercy, I have played Medic, I have played a third game's support character.
I've played a lot of support in League, and I played Mercy, except I use Pistol a lot as Mercy, but that's for another day.
But
in this game, you can give Mercy as Mercy.
So the Medic's second weapon is a Medigun, which is... you look at a person, you click the metagun, and it puts out a healing beam that will heal them as long as you are connected with the medic gun. And it has a certain range, but it'll usually like keep flicking on them. And so the medic's secondary is basically their primary, because one of the first and most important rules you should learn about medic is if you are doing damage, you're probably playing medic wrong.
Always be healing.
Yeah, you should always be near a team, you should always be healing, and if you are caught without it, then you're probably dead.
Yeah.
His primary and his melee are basically obsolete as far as the meta is concerned.
Yeah. When you do enough things with medic, mainly just like healing people, you fill up your Uber charge. Which, again, you can expend to make the person you're healing stronger and healthier.
Yeah.
One of the most common strats for medic is to have a pocket, which is where the medic devotes themselves to, like, one player, who's usually either a heavy or a soldier. I think only a heavy or a soldier. And then that way, the medic is constantly protected, and the... damage dealer is constantly being healed and can immediately make use of those Ubers.
Yeah. It should be noted that the default Uber is just straight up invulnerability.
Yeah.
Like the default minigun is extremely powerful and is just invulnerability. But there are also side grades that are very interesting. Like the Kritzkrieg was the first one, which is just 100% guaranteed crits. But you don't have any of the invulnerability. So, like, if you are given crits, but you are immediately killed, well, the primary is the needle launcher, which is it sounds pitiful.
Yeah, it shoots syringes.
Yeah. There's a couple of side grades, but the only one that really matters is the Crusader's crossbow, which does healing based on how far it traveled. And it is the primary that all medics use.
Yeah.
The Blutsauger also sometimes, but it's kind of suboptimal. And the melee that you use is the Uber Saw, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. His original melee was a bone saw. But the Uber Saw is just, you get 25 Uber on hit. That is insane.
Yeah, Uber like, is very good to get.
Yeah, it like, Uber is important to the point where if somebody is hit with an Ubersaw, they call it out to their team.
Yeah. So yeah, medic is support, core support, very strong, very good. Yes. Next character is sniper, who has a sniper and snipes.
And there's already five of them on your team.
Yeah, sniper is like very popular because people like to have snipes. They like to snipe. They like to be good at sniping. This is not a new thing, and it will not be an old thing.
Yeah, the sniper is, I would say, the most personable of the mercs. His Meet the video is literally, like, the quote from it is, "Sniping's a good job, mate." It's just, like...
And then he, like, talks about how his parents don't like that he's a sniper.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably the most, like, friendly of the characters as far as like lore. His melee weapon is a kukri, which I believe is a New Zealand weapon.
I believe it's an Australian weapon, although it might be New Zealand, and they messed it up because I'm fairly certain he is supposed to be Australian.
Yeah. So sniper has a sniper rifle. I don't think much else really needs to be said about that.
Yeah, the side grades are fun and interesting, but mostly it's about getting those sweet headshots.
Yeah. So one of the most notable side weapons is one that's banned competitively, which is the Jurati, which was taken from... It was directly a reference to the Meet the Sniper video. It is, excuse me here, a jar of piss that causes the target to always get hit by crits, or mini crits. So yeah. you throw it at somebody, they get covered in piss, and then they get mini crits from the piss. It's piss crits.
It cannot be understated how normalized that is, too.
Yeah.
Like, just the original part, the original, like, source of it was the, like, time lapse in the Meet the Sniper video where he's, you know, like a sniper does, sitting in one place and he's just drinking coffee and pissing in a bottle. But then the bottle got added to TF2, and so he could just throw his piss.
You know.
You know.
Yeah, you know.
One of his snipers specifically, like, gives your target the Jurati effect upon a headshot. Like, it is super normalized to the point where it's kind of funny how just laissez-faire it is.
Yeah.
That his secondary is piss.
It can't be understated that the game is very cartoony. Like, yeah. The art style itself is more cartoony than realistic, which helps with that whole silhouette design, but also makes these things seem a little more acceptable.
Yeah, that actually wasn't the original intention either.
Right.
The Team Fortress 2 used to look basically like a boring military shooter before they came up with the cartoon art style.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last class is, I think, one of the most interesting.
Yes.
This is Spy. Spy does not play like any other class in the game. So Spy has the ability to disguise himself as the other teammates' players. I believe you will have the username of another player on the opponent's team if somebody looks at you.
Yes.
Of course, you can't talk to them or anything. And Spy has the ability to backstab people for extra damage. So Spy is like sort of a social deduction minigame where you're trying to look like somebody on the enemy's team or stay unnoticed and then kill them. Now, there are ways to check this. You know, you could just shoot the spy. Some characters have a better time at this, like Pyro. They're able to do so without like using too much ammo. Spy is also notable for being able to sap engineer buildings, which disables them and destroys them if the sapper's left on for enough time. Spy also can get a invisibility watch, which allows the spy to turn invisible. Surprise. which also has one of my favorite alt weapons in the game, the Dead Ringer.
Yes.
Which is like just incredibly bizarre. Because, Dead Ringer is like, if Spy uses it and then is damaged while the buff is active, it looks like the spy dies, but it drops like a fake cloak or a fake corpse, and then the spy is invisible as afterwards. And then also, spy has a alternate dagger called Your Eternal Reward, which disguises yourself as the player you kill. Like, spy has these alternate weapons that really change the way your resources work, but like in a way that makes them just so different and weird.
The spy is extremely fun because in the hands of a bad player, a spy is like laughably easy to just kill. But also along with that fact is the fact that basically half of the meta of the game is dedicated around the possibility of there being a spy.
Yeah. Spies,
like
good spies are like a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very much like they reward only playing the spy in some regards. Very like one trick almost, but like they're very fun.
Yeah. The spy is one of the first classes that like new players tend to gravitate to because he's cool. He's cool and he's very fun. But the spy is also, you kind of have to have a little bit of knowledge of every individual class to play spy, because when you are disguised, like disguises, the only mechanical advantage is that sentries won't shoot you. Like, you look like the other team, but any good player will be able to tell that like a teammate is doing something weird and will go, that's a spy. But yeah. So like, playing spy is playing every other class in addition.
Right.
You have to know how to kind of like move and mimic what they might do in order to convince the other team for even just a split second that you are whatever that class is.
Right. Also, the spy has one of my favorite Meet the shorts. Meet the Spy is also pretty popular as a whole. It's the one I see quoted the most.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. I mean, it has probably one of the best jokes of the entire, like, the entire series.
Okay, so, that's the overview of the characters. The gameplay and map design are kind of harder to go into without looking at it. I really want to mention, though, really quick, just the map Two Fort, which is one of the most well-known of TF2. It's a great map if you're interested in learning like FPS map design, because it's very basic but does a lot of things really well. It's two buildings on opposite sides of like a little river with a bridge going across. And each building has the same layout, just mirrored. And so each building has like their intel briefcase room at the basement floor, which has a few exit methods. There are no real dead ends in the map. Going through the middle, though, requires you to either cross the bridge or go underwater. Going underwater is a little safer from snipers who are usually looking at the bridge, but you move slower. Going across the bridge gives you a brief moment to hide from snipers under the roof, but is a little harder to go through the front doors. And then you could, if you're risky, go across the roof, like if you take out the opponent's snipers, or you are just able to dodge them somehow, I don't know. And that lets you access their own sniper perch and get inside much quicker than it is to go through the front door or the basement. And so, like, it has this sort of two-lane structure, but the lanes are arranged vertically. It has really just solid spawn placement and like really solid base design where there's no real dead ends. There's multiple ways out of every room. And that just makes it a really solid map. And so it's no wonder that it's like one of the most well-known.
Yeah, it is probably the quintessential TF2 map. And it's honestly a very good tutorial map. Like, TF2 has kind of a terrible tutorial. And so Two Fort is sort of the best map to learn your role, because it's like, oh, snipers want high ground and good sight lines, whereas, you know, soldiers want good mobility, spies want to use these alternate paths, etc., etc.
Right. It gives you these very obvious uses for your character, which is pretty effective.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting to note that with how the meta has kind of developed, the offense, defense, and support roles for all of the classes are honestly considered, like, kind of not really the actual roles of the classes. I think Uncle Dane came up with, or has at the very least, like, was it Uncle Dane or was it Lazy Purple? Either way, one of the notable TF2 YouTubers came up with the, or showed the idea of power pick and support classes, where, like, power is your main damage dealers, pick is how you deal with the problem people on the other team, and then support is, you know, who you specifically support your team with. But there's also overlap where, like, Heavy is both power and pick, because he's very good at single target heavy sustained damage, but also at just doing a lot of damage in general, stuff like that.
Yeah, I feel like this is pretty common for games where the players know better than the developers how the game should be played.
Yeah. Overwatch used to say that Symmetra meant that you didn't need a healer, which is wrong.
Yeah. Well, Symmetra went through like 5 reworks, let's not forget.
That's true. We're bringing up Overwatch a lot because Overwatch is sort of the big, like,
we should just do an episode comparison on Overwatch later.
Oh, we should.
So, we've talked about the game a lot. I want to step out of the game. So TF2 is super notable, not just because it's a popular game, but because it's sort of a multimedia franchise without really being that big. It's mainly the game side that's been the popular, well-known thing, but we've talked a lot about the shorts, and, like, the impact of those cannot be understated. These were pretty popular. They're very short, even short as far as shorts go. And so they were very shareable, very viral. They play a lot off of tropes in FPSs, I guess. Oh, shoot. I forgot to totally mention, my favorite thing about Medic is that it's kind of implied that the Medic's medical knowledge is useless and that he only gets by because the Medigun is that effective, as seen in the Meet the Medic short.
Yeah.
So I believe there was like leaked plans of a TF2 Netflix series or something that got canceled, but I feel like this would have worked very well because the shorts already are a sort of mini series. This is especially true if you watch Expiration Date, which is pretty much just a pilot episode.
Yeah.
It has like, it establishes the characters for the most part. It has an arc. The arc gets resolved at the end. It has conflict. It has character growth. It's pretty much like a really solid animated pilot for a TF2 show if they were to ever make one. Because, like, it focuses on Scout and Spy in, like, their relationship, which, again, Meet the Spy is a very popular, very famous short, and that was sort of the main relationship in that short. And then the Expiration Date, you know, it had, like, a climactic action-y ending. It briefly had all the other characters and, like, had them do funny things. So, yeah, I really recommend watching it, even if you're not interested in playing the game.
Yeah.
It has the sort of snark that the characters in the game have. You know, the jar of piss sort of snark. it's... There's a lot of communities that are kind of built around the legacy that these shorts started. We probably can't get into the, like, extreme depth of them today.
Yeah, that's literally its own episode, is like Source Filmmaker and Gmod shorts.
Because also YTPMVs, YouTube music videos, are heavily intertwined with TF2.
God, yeah.
And then TF2 was so ubiquitous, along with pretty much every other Valve property except Ricochet, that, like, it became the subject of memes and, like, fan comics and fan works as a whole. I can think of at least like two webcomics that started as solely TF2 jokes. And I'm not going to say either of them because they're probably not very good.
Is one of them Nerf This?
Yes.
Okay.
Damn. You didn't even say the right thing, but I'm not going to correct you.
Cool.
Those were very popular. TF2 had a huge custom server scene for a while. Which gave way to like Prop Hunt using Pyro as the hunter. Prop Hunt being a game mode where players disguise themselves as objects in the world, like a wooden pallet, a barrel, a net, and they have to look like objects.
Sorry, you said that incorrectly. It's a net.
Yes. And so the hunters have to like find which objects aren't really there, which ones are sus. And
in modern parlance,
there were other mini games. There's a lot of jump maps. There were RP servers. My favorite that I saw was a map that gave the scout infinite jump and like really fast baseballs. And it was just called like a Toho map. it was a series that, because the tone was very like lighthearted, and it didn't take itself seriously, it kind of encouraged these really silly fan interpretations.
Yeah, honestly, I swear, sentence mixing, I'm not going to say anything as bold as sentence mixing started with TF2. That would be ridiculous.
It would be.
But like, the sentence mixing had a major impact on like the TF2 memes.
Right.
So like, Putis is kind of like a very popular heavy thing, because when you say like the line put dispenser here, if you just cut it off after put dis, it sounds like Putis.
Putis.
Or like pain is weakness leaving the body became painous.
Yeah.
Like
it's very much like Guonum in Zelda Link's Awakening, or Link's Awakening in Zelda Wand of Gamelon saying come.
Yeah, there are so many like little sayings that became their own memes that just came about because God, the characters are funny and they have really funny voices.
Yeah, the voice lines have a lot of work into them. The voice lines all have a lot of character. They're just fun to repeat. I think so one of this is what I call the I don't really know what to call it, but basically people that play games with a lot of voice lines love to quote those voice lines, and then they love to butcher those voice lines.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I think it started mostly with like Warcraft or Age of Empires, like a lot of strategy games where like clicking on a unit will make them say something. You can see it a lot with Blizzard games for sure. I think they've even had like impression contests where people do voice lines. But yeah, TF2 is no exception. People love quoting it.
Yeah.
Much as we have.
To the point where like the thing is that like this isn't even in past tense. There are still TF2 YouTubers that are still making things today that are still like getting, not, I'm not going to say recycled, but like getting referenced in and of themselves. So like Lazy Purple was a popular TF2 YouTuber who took a very like 5 years long break and then recently came back. And so one of the semi-popular, like one of the voice lines he's used over and over again is "I am the spy," usually right before something funny happens to the spy, which just like some of my other friends and I now just will quote that, or like the Antoine Dalek's "Heavy is dead" is just its own entire quotable video where it's just, you know, "I am dead. Galen is dead," shit like that. It isn't just like Putis in the past. It's Putis in the future too.
Putis to the future. As someone who loves YTPMVs, I do frequently say "gentlemen."
Yes. Oh, God. I completely forgot about that YTPMP.
Yeah, it's still referenced. Like, Gentle Mental Men is a cornerstone of YTPMV culture.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, we're kind of, like, reaching into nostalgia here, but I think that's what a lot of players would have. You know, when people talk about Valve not making games anymore, it's more so that Valve doesn't release new games and still updates the old ones, but they don't really update them in ways that make them, like, relevant per se. It's more like maintenance sometimes. Yeah. TF2 was definitely at its peak before 2012, I would say, maybe around 2012. You know, I think after that it started to kind of die down into mostly enthusiasts, whereas like before that almost everybody that had Steam played it at some point. And
yeah,
I think that's, again, just because, like, Valve was known for these very quality games. Like, Half-Life and Half-Life 2 were phenomenal, like, groundbreaking releases that revolutionized their genres. And, like we said, TF2 revolutionized its own genre. And it also just had this, like, very vibrant community. And I think part of why there's so many, like, fan works is because so many people played it. And it just became something people would get the joke. Like, when like, people would do spy crabs, which is where Spy would, like, crouch and look up and open the disguise kit. And then people would do those in lobbies. And enough people would do them in lobbies that people would start making fan art of Spy Crab. And then, like, since everybody who had played the game had seen it at least once, they would know what it is. Or, yeah. Like, everybody who'd played, you know, some class had heard them say a voice line, and so they recognized that, and they could kind of be like, hey, I know that, you know. The act of recognizing the joke or the meme is an admission or an indication that you are in a community. And so by being able to recognize those memes, people found value in them.
Which I think you've kind of described all meme culture, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, that is... And I don't say that as, like, eh, you're not making a real point. Like, that is the cornerstone of, like, so many of the discussions we've had of, like, memes are simply a bonding experience between random internet strangers. But, like, they also have a power to... They also have a power to just bring people together in that sense. Like, the TF2 community, you will find people being toxic on various servers. But, like, you will also find a lot of friendly hoovies. You'll find a lot of, you know, people who are just dicking around and doing the conga. Like, it is extremely... It's the kind of place where you just want to go and then just... chill out for a while,
right?
If you're not doing a try hard, and even if you are doing a try hard, you might still have a lot of fun,
and it's less horny than VR chat.
Exactly.
All right,
we do not condone being horny on main,
unless you really want to, in which case that's your decision.
That's true. We have no power over you. Be as horny as you want. Oh gosh, I had... There was another part of TF2 that I wanted to quickly bring up, and I can't remember what it was now.
Watch. Oh, I did want to say, alongside TF2's cultural legacy, it was part of, like, Valve's branding for a while. It heavy made an appearance in Poker Night at the Inventory, which was a crossover game where multiple video game characters played poker, also including Max from Sam & Max. And Strong Bad from Homestar Runner.
Yeah.
Also, the Team Fortress appeared as a playable character in Sega All-Stars Racing Transformed on the PC. I believe it was Spy, Heavy, and Medic. And they would take turns depending on what vehicle you were in.
I think it was Spy, Heavy, and Pyro. I remember this.
Right, yeah. I think Spy drove the plane. Or, like, the airship. Heavy was the car, Pyro was the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Team Fortress 2 is a lot of fun, and it is honestly amazing that it is still going. Like, it's, we say that, like, you know, it kind of hit its peak in 2012, but that doesn't mean that it's dead at all.
It's not at all dead.
Like, I think that the Blue Moon update really kind of pushed the numbers back up to a good amount, and showed that people still quite care about Team Fortress 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it is still the sort of thing where if you've never played it, it is completely free to play, and it is an experience unlike any other. It is jank, don't get me wrong, but, like, it is the kind of jank where I would say, even if you don't think you can get over it, still play a couple of matches and see what you think, you know?
Right. I feel like, so the idea of, like, a canon in video games, the same way there's, like, a canon in literature, is kind of really contested. You know, sort of the idea is, like, if somebody's making a canon, then what is canon is specifically based off whoever's determining that. Like, there's no objective canon. But I do think TF2, for its, like, impact in culture in terms of gaming and its impact in game design, I do think it's, like, a really important game. And I recommend people who are interested in, like, the history of games play it, because it has a lot of interesting ideas and you can sort of build a context around that.
Yeah.
Also, there's not many characters like Spy in video games. At least video games that are meant to be other than Spy. Like, sure, you know, Werewolf is Spy, but that's a game where you are being a deceptive little person.
Fun fact, there's the Spy, actually, like, the whole disguise mechanic came about from a glitch in the original Team Fortress, where I think sometimes the Spy would appear as the corpse of another team is what gave them the idea for it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But yeah, Team Fortress 2, still an exceptional game, still relevant and still, like, continually being relevant. If you are interested in getting into it, there's no shortage of YouTubers whose, like, whole deal is kind of specializing in one class. So Uncle Dane is very good for learning how to do engineering. Engineering in
yeah,
the
he
turn
can help
of the
you
game.
Learn, like, solid structures and, like, your math involved in physics. Yeah.
If you ever need to, like, build a catapult, then, you know, he's a good YouTuber to look into.
But trebuchets, you need somebody else for that.
Yeah, those are a couple centuries away. Uncle Dane is good for, like, learning engineer. Array 7 is good for learning medic. Big Joey is pretty good for learning heavy. And, you know, so on and so forth. Like, there are entire channels and entire people who have, like, dedicated their YouTube channels to just, how do I play one class? Because it can have so much depth.
And that's pretty cool. High skill ceiling. My final notes are, listen to Spies Like Us, listen to A Look Inside Soldier's Mind, and watch Expiration Date, because it's actually pretty good.
Yes.
And with that, that is it for NetSurfer Pro. Thank you for listening. If you'd like, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at NetSurfer Pro. I almost said my other podcast. You can follow us on your preferred podcasting platform of your choice. We're on all major platforms. You can, you know, like us, rate us, comment at us, get that sweet, sweet search engine optimization. I tripped over the word.
Yeah,
I'm tired.
We've been tagging our posts with really outdated stuff. Like, is Rebecca Black's Friday still a thing?
I think we have about two or three more years before it becomes a meme again.
Okay, good.
So you can you can give us suggestions on anything you're interested in us covering. We have a lot of things planned, but we could always use more because we will run out of ideas. The universe is finite. which is not actually true. The universe is constantly expanding. Don't listen to my words about astrophysics. But you can also check out all our other episodes. We've done a lot of fun stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I tweet out different things, different links to stuff I'm working on. If it's like music or YouTube videos or Twitch streams or a podcast, you can find it there. I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 1 p.m. Central Time to about 3 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of competitive games, a lot of roguelites, some single-player games here and there, mainly platformers like Mario 3D World recently. I have been playing Bravery Network Online, which is a fun competitive game, and I have hosted one tournament of it and will probably host the next one. On my Twitter, I always tweet out links to when I go live. And through the Twitch page, you can find a Discord server where you can talk to me and other fans of my work, and Galen often posts funny things there.
Yeah.
And you can follow me on YouTube at youtube.com/IEatAtSonic. That's IEATATSONIC. I have VODs from that tournament I just mentioned, but I also have fun analytical videos, mainly on the video game The Witness, and other things to come soon, TM.
You can follow me at Twitter. Yeah, we're getting... You've got a lot of social links. You're really connected.
Soon I'll unlock a new ability, and I can equip, like, cooler nunchucks or something. I don't know. I've never played Persona.
It's actually, you unlock Harrison Decovery, where if someone is going to get hurt, you hurt them more.
Ah, yes.
You can find me on Twitter at Galen Wilson. That is at GalenWilson0n. I post my hot takes and whatnot. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. I swear one of these days I'm going to post a video there. And you can find me on Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire, just Machine Gun Vampire, where I have recently started a D&D game, including one you might have heard of him. His name is Seamus. He's an online friend of mine on Discord. Oh, and also Matt is there.
Yeah, I'm there too.
With that, we've been NetSurfer Pro, and we now have to drive the soldier from Team Fortress 2 home.
I am ready to leave as soon as you want me to. Let me just finish up teleporting this bread. And wait a minute. I think the teleporter's broken. We need to call the engineer.
Oh, damn. Howdy, y'all. I'm the engineer. You called me? I drive very fast.
Wow, did you make that car yourself?
Why, yes, I did. It runs off of Australium, and it goes faster than the speed of sound.
It goes faster than the speed of... Okay, you know what? That's fine. Listen, this teleporter's broken?
Oh, wait a minute. You haven't been teleporting any bread, have you?
I have done nothing but teleport bread for the last hour and a half. All right.
Oh,
see ya.
No.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.